Welcome to Madrid en Inglés, Madrid in English, a tour, a colorful educational tour of our capital, Madrid, and of our province, La Comunidad de Madrid. Learn English with me, with Richard Vaughn, using Madrid as our base of operations. Yeah, let's go. Good morning and welcome. Welcome to a new edition. Yes, a new edition of Madrid en Inglés, Madrid in English. Every Sunday from 10 to 11 in the morning, we have a moment for you to stay in touch with the English language, maybe to improve, maybe to consolidate, maybe to maintain, and hopefully to learn and to enjoy 1 hour every week, Sunday morning, talking about Madrid, basically about Madrid and the province of Madrid. I've been living in Madrid for, I think, since the 11th century. Yes, I've been here longer than San Isidro, but I'm not sure. It seems that I didn't meet San Isidro. I never met San Isidro. Yeah. So, I think he lived in Madrid before I came. I came to Madrid in August 1972. I returned for a second time in July 1974. But during 1972-73, I lived in Madrid for 10 academic months. Then I returned to Austin, Texas, the capital, and I finished my degree. And I decided to return to Spain in 1974, summertime 1974, with the idea of staying here for 2 years. Now, that is, July 1974. Now, last week, when I finished my program, I was, let's say, around January 1976. January, February, March, the first quarter, let's say, the first trimester, quarter. Se dice quarter en los negocios, quarter, primer trimestre. En lo académico se dice trimester. So both are correct. Trimester refers to the academic subdivisions of an academic year. And the quarter refers to the 1/4, 3 months in the fiscal year or financial year. Fiscal year, the Americans say fiscal year, but el ejercicio fiscal, el año fiscal de una empresa. We say, the Americans say fiscal year, o sea, año fiscal. And the British usually say financial year, año financiero. So both are correct. But we say quarter when we're talking, except if we're not talking about academic life, we say the quarter, the first quarter, the first 3 months of 1976. So I have not completed yet those 2 years. Okay. But something is going to happen in September 1976, which will prompt me to postpone decisions about leaving the country. But I'm not there yet. Maybe I'll reach that a month during this session, this Sunday, today. Maybe not. Maybe next week. It depends. It depends. But if this is your first time listening to me, my name is Richard Vaughn. I am an English teacher. I've been teaching English since August 1974, which means that I've been teaching English for more than 50 years. Between actual classroom teaching and radio teaching and television teaching, I have taught more than 50,000 hours. So it's an average of 1,000 hours per year. It's a lot of teaching. So I'm an expert on I'm not an expert on English linguistics. I'm not. I'm an expert on how to get people to reach an effective communication level in English for professional environments. So I'm not really an English teacher. No soy profesor de inglés. Soy dotador de habilidades comunicativas en inglés. Suena rarísimo. That sounds very strange. To endow people. I mean, if your English is not enough to get by in your work, to get by es salir del paso, apañarse. If your English is not enough, I can take you to a useful level of English. And it doesn't necessarily mean mastering irregular verbs or phrasal verbs. Not necessarily. It's an ability. It's not knowledge. No son conocimientos, son habilidades comunicativas. So, I've been teaching for a long time, and now, every Sunday from 10 to 11, I'm teaching indirectly. I'm talking about my life in Madrid and using Madrid as the backdrop, el telón de fondo. Background, aquí no se dice, see the backdrop. Yes. I'm using it, the backdrop, for what I'm talking about in English. So it's basically for people who have a low intermediate level or better, which is the majority of the people who would enjoy this program. I'm not here to teach English. I'm here to talk about Madrid. And I'm using my life in Madrid as the, let's say, at least for the first 30 programs, the first 30 Sundays, maybe as a linea. How do you say, la trama, the plot, the storyline, mejor dicho, the storyline. And Madrid's a very interesting city. And it has a lot of potential. In my opinion, it has more potential than Barcelona. In Valencia is a very interesting city as well. Malaga is a very popular city now. Seville, of course, is a fantastic city. Bilbao, over the past 20, 30 years, has become a very attractive city. And there are many other very nice cities in Spain. But Madrid, I think, is the city of the future for the Mediterranean. The four important countries that are on the northern side of the Mediterranean are Turkey, Greece, well, five, really. Turkey, Greece, Italy, France, and Spain, because Portugal is on the Atlantic, not on the Mediterranean. Now, the capital, of course, of Turkey is Ankara. Istanbul, of course, is the most populated and the most popular destination for tourists and businesses. In Greece, we have Athens, basically Athens, which is the capital and the destination for business. Then in Italy, we have Rome, the capital. And, however, I think the most important destination for business is Milan in the north. Then in France, of course, the capital is Paris. But Paris is more of an Atlantic and north. Paris is close to the English Channel. It's close to Belgium. It's close to Great Britain. It's not really Mediterranean. Marseille, perhaps, you could say, but Marseille is a port city, but not a magnet, iman, not a magnet for business. Then we have Spain. Barcelona is a very attractive city, and Valencia, of course, is extremely attractive. But Valencia is a bit smaller. Barcelona is a very attractive city, but Barcelona has been, in my opinion, declining since, for the past 15 or 20 years, partially because of the political questions that everybody is familiar with, but also I think because of too much tourism, and there's a problem with safety in the streets. Of course, Madrid cannot throw the first stone, but Madrid, I think, is a considerably safer city than Barcelona. Now, Madrid is an attractive city in Europe. For me, it's the most, of all the European capitals, it's the one with the greatest potential right now. We have Rome, Athens, Paris, Vienna, Bern, Switzerland, or Zurich. Digamos Zurich. Zurich. We have Berlin, London, Dublin, Copenhagen, Stockholm, Oslo, Helsinki, Warsaw, Eastern Europe, you know, Belgrade, Serbia. And so Bratislava, Prague, and Hungary. What's that? Budapest. Now, the major capitals, what I consider the truly major capitals of Europe, are four, in my opinion. There are four: London, Paris, Rome, and Berlin. Vienna is very important because of its history and the cultural element that people identify with Vienna. But the four big capitals are those. And then we can include Stockholm and Copenhagen, etc. But, I forgot. Amsterdam and Brussels. And then Luxembourg is very important for banking and finance. But Madrid is the cheapest of all of these cities, considerably cheaper, even though Madrid is expensive, very expensive compared to Zamora or Burgos or Teruel or Soria or Albacete. Madrid is expensive. It's a problem. Yeah, young people are having trouble finding an affordable apartment to rent. And so, yes, Madrid is expensive, but it is considerably less expensive than Paris, Rome, London, Berlin, Brussels, Amsterdam, Stockholm, or Copenhagen, or Vienna, or Milan, which is not a capital. Second, so Madrid still has a lot of recorrido, let's say. Madrid is going to move up, I think, in the next 20 to 30 years. By the year 2050, I have a feeling that Madrid will be on a par with the rest of the major European capitals. So the four major capitals, when people think of major European capitals, principales capitales, major European capitals, people think of London, Paris, Rome, and usually Berlin. I think by 2050, there'll be five: London, Paris, Rome, Berlin, and Madrid. I think Madrid will reach the same status. And of course, the cost of living will rise as well, for better or for worse. Para bien o para mal, for a lot of people. I mean, if you own a house in Madrid, I think that house will probably be double, maybe triple by the year 2050, if not more, depending on the general inflation in the Western world, in Europe. But I think there's a second reason. Madrid, together with Miami, Florida, is a capital for Latin America. More and more Latin Americans are coming to Spain, but more specifically to Madrid. The more political instability there is, or the more left-wing governments there are in Latin America, the more people will come to Madrid. The money is coming to Madrid from Mexico, from Colombia, from especially Venezuela, of course, Venezuela, Peru, and before from Argentina. Now, with Mr. Milei, we need to wait and see the extent of the success. If he can be successful, then maybe the flux of Argentines coming to Spain will slow down. There are a lot of people from Uruguay. But right now, it's Venezuela, Colombia, Mexico, and Peru. Of course, a lot of people are coming from Ecuador as well, but these are people of more modest means, not the moneyed people. People with money are coming to Madrid more than Barcelona or Malaga or Valencia or Seville. People with money are coming to Madrid from Mexico, Peru, Venezuela, and Colombia. Colombia, especially since the current president won the elections in Colombia. He is a left-wing president. And of course, with AMLO and his successor, the lady whose name I can't remember, Steenbaum or something, I think a lot of Mexican money is partially coming to Spain and people are buying flats. That's why it's one of the reasons the price of flats in the center of the city, in nice areas like the Barrio Salamanca or Chamberí, etc., these prices have gone up because there are a lot of Latin Americans, Brazilians as well, who come here. So we'll see if this continues. But there's a second, also from Latin America, a lot of students are coming, especially university students. They're coming to study, usually in private universities, like Alfonso X el Sabio or Francisco de Vitoria or the Universidad Europea. And there are a lot of Latin Americans because these young students, age 18, 19, 20, they don't need an armored car and a bodyguard. An armored car, armado, coche armado means coche blindado in English. Armored, escrito. An armored car is un coche blindado. So the son of a very wealthy Mexican entrepreneur, for example, can come to Spain and study in the IE, or can study in the Francisco Vitoria, or in the Alfonso X el Sabio, or in Camilo José Cela, and they can study. And they're safe here. They can walk the streets of Madrid. They can go out at night, and they can move around in their own car, driving it themselves. They don't need an armored car, and they don't need bodyguards. And this is something that's extremely important for a lot of Latin Americans. So depending on the country, Latin Americans who come here, they enjoy the sensation of being able to walk in the streets, on the sidewalks, por las aceras, of the city of Madrid or Valencia, and they feel, my God, there's no danger. And it's very important. So Madrid, Barcelona less, and Madrid is a very, very attractive city now for people in Central and South America. And so for the students, and then for an important portion of the money, many Latin Americans are buying houses. So Madrid is a very good investment for the long term. If I had $1 billion, I would take 200 million and buy real estate in Madrid. Commercial property, but especially residential property, because I think it's a good investment. But over the long, not for me, for my children or my grandchildren, because I don't need a long-term investment now at my age, but my children, yes, could benefit. And my grandchildren, of course, because I honestly think that if you buy a beautiful flat in Salamanca neighborhood for $2 million in 15 years, it will be worth $4 million. Of course, there can be a worldwide cataclysm. A meteorite can strike the earth and create havoc, or a very deep Great Depression, like in the 1930s, could happen. And it's not true, but I think it would be a good decision to use 20% of my $1 billion, or 1 billion euros, si lo tuviera. If I had 1 billion euros, I would take 20% of it and invest it in the city of Madrid, one way or another. So, on the one hand, we're fortunate to be living in Madrid. However, on the other hand, we have to take into consideration that the prices will continue to go up with certain ups and downs, altibajos, but the price will continue to go up. I think indefinitely, over the next 25 years until the year 2050. We'll see. I was not planning to talk about finance, but I was talking about the the future of Madrid, and I'm an optimist. I'm an optimist by nature, but about Madrid, I'm very optimistic that it's a very good wager. It's a very good investment in this city, more than any other city in Europe, I think. Major capital in Europe. Okay, I need to take a short break, but I'll be back in just a few minutes.
¿Necesitas reír? Pues no te pierdas La madre que me parió en el Teatro Lara, octava temporada de la comedia de éxito que ya han visto más de 500,000 de personas. La madre que me parió en el Teatro Lara, una loca comedia sobre las relaciones madre-hija. Líos y secretos en La madre que me parió. Más info en teatrolara.com.
¿Eres de los que se quejan porque nunca les toca la lotería?
Eso se ha terminado. Soy Joaquín Monroy, mejor lotero de España 2023 y dueño de la chulapa de Moncloa. Juntos fuimos los primeros en dar 6 gordos de lotería en 15 meses y ahora queremos serlo en dar 3 gordos seguidos de Navidad. Te esperamos en el intercambiador de Moncloa, Isla 1, planta menos 2.
Loterías te recuerda que juegues con responsabilidad y solo si eres mayor de edad.
¿Te imaginas cantar y revivir algunos de los grandes temas de Mecano como Hijo de la Luna o Perdido en mi habitación en un formato totalmente único? Llega a Madrid Mecan Experience, el espectáculo musical que nos hará emocionarnos con las canciones que marcaron una época. Compra tus entradas en mecanexperience.com y disfruta de la esencia de Mecano como nunca antes lo habías hecho.
Restaurante J, cocina vasca, un referente de buena mesa en Chamberí, con la sencillez y honestidad de la cocina de siempre, donde comer bien, sin tontunas, con familia, amigos, tu cuadrilla, verduras, guisos de temporada y pescados salvajes al centro de la mesa. Restaurante J, una cocina para siempre, a 50 metros de la Glorieta de Bilbao. Reserva y disfruta.
Onda Madrid, 101.3 y 106 FM.
Hello and welcome back. Okay, we're back for our second segment of today's Sunday, today's edition of Madrid en Inglés, Madrid in English. Today is Sunday morning. It's a good time to improve your English. And I'm talking about Madrid, the city. In the last segment, I was talking about the city from an investment point of view and from a growth point of view. And from the future of the city of Madrid, I'm very optimistic. I have been living in Madrid for 51 years in all, 52 maybe. So it's a lot. I've watched Madrid develop, and I have enjoyed living in Madrid very much. Although I imagine I would enjoy living in any city because of the type of person I am, mi forma de ser. I just enjoy life, and I think I would enjoy life even if I were living in Teruel or in Soria or in Zamora or in Vitigudino in Salamanca or in Talamanca del Jarama, just north of Madrid. I would enjoy it anyway because I enjoy life and I enjoy people, I enjoy work. I'm fortunate that I grew up in an atmosphere that was positive and optimistic. Good parents, good primary school teachers. Siete maestros de primaria de párvulos a sexto. Nos guiaron con cariño y firmeza. They were good. I had very good teachers in primary school. I remember all of them very well. In secondary school, between the age of 13 and 18, I remember a few, but I don't remember their names. So they didn't make a strong impact on me. Of course, I was not as young and impressionable. When you're in primary school, you are young and very impressionable. And so you have a very intimate memory or a very affectionate memory many times of your good teachers when you were 7 years old, 8 years old, 9 years old. Later, after puberty, when you're 13 and 14, you're a teenager, you don't pay as much attention to your teachers and you are not as impressed necessarily by your teachers. But let's get back to Madrid and my life. All right. Right now, When I finished my program last Sunday, it was the first quarter, January, February, March of 1976, and I was living on Calle Princesa Número 8. Good place. Behind me was El Palacio de Lidia, you know, where the Duquesa en aquel entonces, the Duchess of Alba, apparently, supposedly was living. Across the street was the Plaza de Cubos. Two blocks up the street was the Meliá Princesa. Meliá Madrid se llamaba entonces, ahora Meliá Princesa. And of course, in the opposite direction, we had the Plaza de España. And then walking down Ventura Rodriguez Street, I could reach the Templo de Debod. And of course, the West Park, Parque del Oeste. If you've listened to my program since October, you will know that the first 4 months that I lived in Madrid in 1972 as a student, I lived on Rosales. So I was very familiar with that area, the area of Argüelles, Plaza España, Moncloa, and the area behind Conde Duque, and back in that area of Madrid, La Travesía de la Calle de Conde Duque, La Travesía de Conde Duque. Many years later, I would live on the Travesía de Conde Duque in a convent converted into flats in viviendas, un convento de frailes jesuitas, Travesía de Conde Duque. Número 7? I can't remember. I think it's number 7. Very interesting place. But I'll get to that. Oof. I'll get to that in about 2 or 3 months, probably. Because that was in the year 2001, 2002. And right now I'm in 1976. But I'm talking about Madrid. And at that time, in 1976... La Cuesta de San Vicente was called Onésimo Redondo. Príncipe Pío was the Estación del Norte. The Gran Vía was Avenida José Antonio. Santa Ingracia was Joaquín García Morato. And Príncipe Vergara was Avenida General Mola. I'm trying to remember some of the others. I can't remember. I'm forgetting quite a few. You know, I think La División Azul, I think that is still, that street is still called that. They have not changed that name because there's too much sensitivity about that. And also, Avenida General Perón, they haven't changed that name either. It's interesting. Why? Well, Juan Perón and Eva Perón, if you remember Eva Perón came to Spain on a type of an official visit, I think in 1952, maybe 1951. I'm not sure. Let me ask. I'm going to ask Google for a moment. Visita Eva Perón a Madrid. Bueno, a Madrid, a España. All right. I say 1950, yes. Let's see. I know. 1947? Wait a minute. All right, I was completely wrong. 1947. Al término de la Segunda Guerra Mundial, España no era un país bien visto por los vencedores. En el año 47, España sufría. And Juan Domingo Perón, all right, he sent his wife. 1947. Oh, it's much earlier than I thought. Well, when did Eva Perón die? You know, she died of cancer. Eva Perón. She died of cancer in 1952. Okay. So, she didn't come in 1952. 1947. But during the period of hunger in Spain, after the Spanish Civil War, during the period of what they call the extraperlo and all of these things, people in the cities were having trouble eating, getting a good nutrition. And, of course, the Second World War was going on north of the Pyrenees, so the rest of Europe was not in a position to help Spain. Juan Domingo Perón was the only person, the only country that made a serious effort to send food, cereal, beef, but especially grano, cereal, to Spain. And so Spain has, even though Juan Domingo Perón is not considered by many people in Spain to be the ideal leader, the Peronistas, he was important for Spain in the 1940s. And maybe that's the reason that the street in Madrid, Avenida General Perón, has not been changed. Very recently, a lot of streets in Madrid, Capitanaya, has been changed to Poeta Joan Maragall. General Varela has, I think, been changed to Julián Besteiro. I don't remember. General Yagüe maybe is Julián Besteiro. I don't remember. When I catch a taxi now, I still use the old words. I say, Capitanaya, because I don't remember the names. I still say the same. And now Comandante Zorita, now is Aviador Zorita. They changed the names of the streets. You know, it's really, I think what you should do, what they should do is give the names of the streets to famous musicians, novelists, poets, who are not connected to ideologies or to politics. You know, Calle de Don Quixote, Calle de Sancho Panza, Calle de Calderón de la Barca. They should do Calle de Lope de Vega. Of course, we have these. But if you say Calle de Sabino Arana, it could create a problem. It could create a problem. It created a problem for me because the first important office that my company had for English teaching in Barcelona was on Calle Sabino Arana. And it was interesting that some people in Barcelona didn't want to do business with us because of our address on Sabino Arana Street. I think there were only two cases. But it was interesting that they refused. They didn't want to do business with any entity that was domiciliado in Sabino Arana Street. So, the best is probably like New York City, Manhattan, 43rd Street and 7th Avenue. So you have the numbers, 41st Street and 5th Avenue. So that's the best way to do it. In Bogota, every street is a number, Calle 713. And so you tell the taxi driver 713, and so the taxi driver knows esta es el barrio de los 700. So he knows instantly where to go. You know, if you catch a taxi here and you say Calle de los Dos Amigos, the taxi driver usually needs to check on his cell phone or on his GPS. The GPS, on the GPS to find Calle de los Dos Amigos. You see, I lived on Calle de los Dos Amigos for 1 year. Do you know where it is? It's a tiny street, maybe 200 meters long, exactly behind the Edificio España del Plaza España. Right in the middle of the back of that enormous building, there's a little street. And that's Calle de los Amigos. And there I lived from 1977 to 1978. Yes. For about a year, I lived there. And so it's a very nice street. No traffic. That's a good thing. No noise. And I had a terrace, and I could go out on the terrace, and it was like living in the country. There was no noise on that little street, Calle de los Dos Amigos. But you say that to a taxi driver. Many years ago, they need to take out the callejero, you remember, the book, and to look for the street. And there are many streets in Madrid. Yeah, Calle whatever. Torpedero Tucumán or something, but that's an important street. But there are a lot of streets that the taxi drivers, even veteran taxi drivers, don't know. Maybe they have been there, but they don't remember. Yeah. And so, and that's why I would prefer, of course, it's not very romantic to have only with numbers, but Manhattan, you know, 33rd Street and 4th Avenue, I mean, they have romantic songs. On 43rd Street and 7th Avenue, la-da-da-da-da-da. You could be poetic with numbers as well. Yes, you could be poetic. And romantic, even with numbers. How can you make mathematics romantic? Sing a song or write a poem using numbers. Querer es poder. Where there's a will, there's a way. And so you can do it. But nevertheless, here I am in the first 3 months of 1976, living in Princesa Número 8, in a studio apartment, 30 square meters. I have a living room with a fold-out couch, a bathroom, and a kitchen. When you open the door from the hall, el pasillo, you're in the kitchen. You're in the kitchen. De hecho, al abrir la puerta, estorba en la cocina del pasillo de llegada. So, but it's okay. I have never been materially ambitious. A little bit, but not very much. And so I was paying 10,000 pesetas a month, living alone, although a lady 9 years older than me often came into Madrid from La Central Nuclear Solita to visit me. But it was nice. And so I was living alone. I'm going to have to take a break in just a few seconds again, but I'll be back to talk more about Calle Princesa, Intercom Idiomas, and giving classes, and the transition. I'll be back.
¿Necesitas guardar tus muebles en espera de nueva vivienda o reforma? Confía en Estebaranz. Llevamos los contenedores a tu casa para una mínima manipulación. Mudanzas y guardamuebles Estebaranz. Desde siempre a tu lado.
Dame una manzana y moveré el mundo. Arquímedes hoy sería cooperativista de la OSA. El supermercado con buenos alimentos, buena gente, buenos precios. Tú también puedes cuidarte y cuidar del planeta. Súmate a la OSA. Avenida de Asturias 57, Madrid. Es un consejo de Uncuma, Unión de Cooperativas de Consumidores y Usuarios de Madrid. Campaña cofinanciada por la Comunidad de Madrid.
11.437.
¿Eres de los que se quejan porque nunca les toca la lotería?
Eso se ha terminado. Soy Joaquín Monroy, mejor lotero de España 2023 y dueño de la chulapa de Moncloa. Juntos fuimos los primeros en dar 6 gordos de lotería en 15 meses y ahora queremos serlo en dar 3 gordos seguidos de Navidad. Te esperamos en el intercambiador de Moncloa, Isla 1, planta menos 2.
Loterías te recuerda que juegues con responsabilidad y solo si eres mayor de edad.
Llega la Navidad. Es momento de compartir, de disfrutar, de revivir los mejores momentos. Maestros asadores del auténtico cordero y cochinillo segoviano. Reserva tu cena con nosotros en asadorvillaranda.com.
101.3 y 106 FM, Onda Madrid.
Hello again, welcome back. All right, we're back for 1976, the first semester from January to June. I was living on Princesa Street. I was teaching and managing and doing translations in Intercom Idiomas located on the Calle Mayor. All right, Calle Mayor. And so every day I don't remember how I went. I don't remember if I walked. I think what I did, I took the metro from Ventura Rodriguez, maybe, or Plaza España to Sol or to Callao. And then from there I walked. You know, it's interesting about your memory. I just don't remember how I got to my job. Of course, usually I didn't go to the office. No, every day. Every single day I went first. When I left, I went to teach. At the beginning, I went to Tafesa, a company located in Villa Verde Bajo. And what I did was I went to a bar on Ventura Rodriguez. I think it was Ventura Rodriguez Street, yes. And there was a bar there, and I had coffee with churros. I remember every morning at about 7 o'clock. And there was a fat guy, a fat man, who was always there drinking anise, not coffee. He arrived and had anise. And many of the workers, the construction workers, came into that bar and they had a sol y sombra, or they had cognac or anise. Anisette. In English, we say anisette, anisette, but anise. And so it was interesting. They don't do that anymore. You don't see that anymore. But in the 1970s, I saw that a lot, starting the morning with a strong chupito fuerte, a strong shot. Para un chupito decimos shot, como disparo, un disparo de anís, disparo de cognac, brandy, or something similar, or sol y sombra. And so, and this man was an American guy, very strange person. But they picked me up. One of my students, Luis, came down Ventura Rodriguez and picked me up and then took me all the way to Villa Verde, my God. I remember going around and crossing over to Marques de Vadillo, and then out. It took probably 30 minutes, 35 minutes, 40 minutes. And there I gave 2 hours of class. Then I returned to Madrid and to the Calle Mayor, and I began managing the teachers or doing translations. And as I said, the most important client for Intercom at that time, the two most important clients were Ford Motor Company, La Ford, and Zardoya Otis Ascensores, the number one. Now, Ford Motor Company was launching the Ford Fiesta. Yes. Now, the Ford Fiesta was launched, I think, in 1976. Yeah, cuando se lanzó por primera vez el Ford Fiesta. El o la Ford Fiesta. El Ford Fiesta. All right, in España. 1976, but it doesn't say the month. All right, Ford Fiesta. Let's see, the Ford Fiesta was the first generation of the Ford Fiesta. Fue lanzado en 76, pero no dice, it doesn't say the month. And I need to know this, so I'm going to go into ChatGPT. I'm going to go in to ChatGPT. Yeah, and I'm going to ask in Spanish. ¿Cuándo? ¿En qué mes? ¿En qué mes y año se lanzó el Ford Fiesta en España? All right. See if I can get the month. That's important for me for my story. En febrero. Okay. I thought it was in November. Febrero del 77, eso sí. Okay, now. The reason it's important, because during 1976, probably 20% of my time, or more, was devoted to translating into Spanish, usually, all of the manuals and everything related to the Ford Motor Company. I learned very quickly how to say, carburetor, taques, los segmentos, los pistones y el cilindro, y el árbol de levas, el cigüeñal. These are components of an internal combustion engine, you see. And los taques. I can't remember. I'm forgetting the names now, but I know them in English and in Spanish. And it was interesting because when I was in high school, 17 years old, my next to last year of secondary school, I took a one semester course in the school in engines, motores. So I was familiar with the engine, And I was also so familiar with the names of the parts and components of an engine in English. So I had to learn very quickly in Spanish. But not only about the engine, because I had to translate for the spare parts department, el departamento de recambios, en la Ford decían recambios. Luego en John Deere, los tractores decían repuestos, no recambios. So both words are correct. I had to do a lot of translation for the spare parts department, for the accounting department. Wow. So I learned all of the accounting terminology, el neto patrimonial, o sea, el cuentas a cobrar o clientes, cuentas a pagar o proveedores, and deuda a largo plazo, and recursos propios o fondos propios. And so I, de beneficio antes impuestos, después de impuestos, all these things. Margen de explotación. I had to learn all these things. And we had to adapt. The question was to adapt the Ford internal accounting system. El sistema contable interno de la Ford. The internal accounting system had to be transferred into Spanish for the spend. Then the dealer networks. La red de, crear una red de concesionarios. It was a lot of work for Ford Motor Company. And I was helping in the translation. Yes, translating the for the marketing department. My God. Yes, y todo gira en torno al Taunus, el Ford Taunus, I remember. Y nacido fuerte. Yes, I wrote that. I was the indirectly, no, entre bastidores, back, you know, behind the scenes, I created that nacido fuerte because in one of the translations, in English it said that the car is born strong. And I say, la Ford nacido fuerte. And born strong. So it was my translation, and that became the lema, or the slogan, Ford Fiesta Nacido Fuerte, born strong. And so I spent a lot of time in Ford Motor Company, located in the Plaza de Cuzco, on Sor Angela Cruz. And it was interesting, because I went up to that building maybe 50 times, in the first 6 months of 1976. And I remember Azca was still un campo con ovejas, lo que es Azca hoy. Yes, Azca. Azca today is very different than when I was going to Ford Motor Company in Cuzco. As I said, I remember the sheep, those are las ovejas. I remember. Madrid has changed a lot since I came here. However, the spirit, the atmosphere, has not changed that much. It hasn't changed as much as many people think. From the point of view of the way the people live, las terrazas, people are still out on the terraces on the evenings when the weather is nice, every day. Not only on Friday afternoon, Saturday afternoon, or Sunday afternoon, but people are out and about. People are everywhere. Yes, people are enjoying the outdoors. It's interesting, Spain's time, el uso horario, the time, is 2 hours ahead of the sun between March or April and October. And it's 1 hour ahead of the sun during the winter, during the late fall and the winter, early spring. So Spain is always at least 1 hour ahead of the sun. And 2 hours when the days are longer. So you have days, for example, in the middle of July, you can go to the Plaza de España or to Cibeles, anywhere in Madrid, to the Retiro Park, to the West Park. And you can enjoy light until 10:30. So people take advantage of this. People enjoy the outdoors. Spanish people enjoy the outdoors. Of course, this is something that was common going way back, because in the summertime, the weather is so hot that later, when the sun began to go down, when the sun began to set, people came out of their homes, their houses, their flats, their apartments, to enjoy el fresquito, tomar el fresquito. I remember this expression. I learned this expression in Ramonacito Zurita, in La Plaza del Coso, in this little town in Spain. The people came out and sat on fold-out chairs, sillas plegables, tipo playa, out in front of the doors of their respective viviendas, their respective houses, and chatted, of course, talked, and they said, "Estamos aquí disfrutando el fresquito." Okay. And it was 10 o'clock at night in June or July. I remember that. Or in September and October. Sometimes the weather in October in Spain, in central Spain, is still very nice. You can have some very nice days and very nice evenings, even in October. This year it's been a little bit cooler. This year has been a bit cooler. But then years I remember in the recent past. I remember October, very warm Octobers. I remember maybe 25 years ago, one October in which we had a student from Microsoft, who was taking a 10-hour-a-day intensive and spent time out in the terrace of our language school, my language school, enjoying the good weather, and it was in the middle of October. And she was out at 6 p.m., 7 p.m., enjoying. She became the president the chairman of Microsoft Spain for a certain amount of time, and then Siemens as well. Yeah, very interesting lady, Rosa. But in any case, getting back to our story, I spent a lot of time in Ford Motor Company doing translations and giving classes. And I watched how the area around the Bernabeu Stadium began to grow. It was already well developed when I got there. But there were certain areas that were not. And so I was fortunate enough to see Madrid, first of all, during 3 years of the Franco regime, and then during the transition. I have been a witness, he sido testigo, I've been a witness to a lot of very interesting Spanish history of the past, oh, that's the past 51 years, really. I came in 1972, so it's 52 years, really, in 1972. It's been very interesting. People were optimistic in the 70s, despite the fact that the transition was quite messy. The inflation was very high. ETA and Grapo and El Frap were very busy with terrorist activities. There was a lot less safety in the streets, but people were optimistic because Spain was changing and Spain was going to become a democracy. People were optimistic. Now it seems less. It seems less. But in any case, I'm coming up to the end of another program for today. I hope you've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it. I've had a good time. But I'll be back next week for more. So take care and have a great week.